Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast. The following podcast, hosted by the Federalist Society's Telecommunications and Electronic Media Practice Group, was recorded on Tuesday, November 8th, 2016, during a live teleform conference call held exclusively for Federalist Society members. Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group teleform conference call, as today we discuss broadband privacy. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups here at the Federalist Society. Please note that all expressions of opinion are those of the experts on today's call. Also, this call is being recorded for use as a podcast in the future. We're very pleased to welcome three experts to our call today, one of whom will act as our moderator. There are going to be some question and answers among the three participants, moderated by Neil Chilson. But after that, as always, we'll be looking to the audience for questions, so please do be thinking of your questions for when we get to that portion of the program. Our moderator, Neil Chilson, is attorney advisor to Commissioner Maureen Olhausen at the Federal Trade Commission. I believe he's a repeat guest here on Teleform, and as I mentioned, he's going to move the program forward. With that, the floor is yours, Mr. Chilson.
Thank you, Dean. Hello to everyone, and welcome to this teleforum. As Dean mentioned, my name is Neil Chilson. I am an attorney advisor for Federal Trade Commissioner Maureen K. Olhausen, and a former telecommunications law attorney at the firm Wilkinson Barker Knauer. I'll be moderating today's teleforum on the FCC's brand new order setting privacy and data security rules for broadband internet service providers. And joining me today are two experts on these new rules and active participants in the process that led to their adoption. First with us is Dallas Harris. Dallas is a policy fellow at Public Knowledge, which is a public interest advocacy group that promotes freedom of expression, an open internet, and access to affordable communications tools and creative works. Dallas at Public Knowledge has been an active advocate for the FCC's privacy rulemaking. Prior to PK, Dallas was a law clerk for the firm Utrecht Kleinfeld Fiori, and she has also worked at Public Citizen, and she interned at the FTC's Bureau of Consumer Protection. Like me, Dallas earned her JD at the George Washington University Law School, and she reportedly is quite good at tennis, which I assume will come in handy during our policy discussion back and forth today. Also joining us is Michelle Rosenthal. Michelle is Senior Corporate Counsel at T-Mobile, where she focuses on privacy and data security policy. She has represented T-Mobile in numerous filings and ex partes before the FCC in the proceeding leading up to these rules. Prior to T-Mobile, Michelle was an attorney at the Federal Trade Commission from 2008 to 2013, except for the year that she spent clerking for Justice Warren Silver of the Maine Supreme Court. During her time at the FTC, Michelle was part of the team that worked on the FTC's 2012 privacy report. Michelle also earned her degree, her JD, from the George Washington University Law School. So before we three GW law grads get into the specifics about the FCC's new order on broadband privacy, let me set the scene. And thanks most of all to the panelists for joining us today and to you. So to set the scene a little bit, in early 2015, the FCC adopted the Open Internet Order to establish net neutrality rules for broadband providers. As part of that order, the FCC reclassified broadband internet access service providers, which I'm going to call ISPs from now on, as Title II common carrier services. Previously, broadband ISPs have been Title I services, and their privacy and data security practices fell under the jurisdiction of the Federal Trade Commission, which is the General Consumer Protection Agency in the United States. Because of reclassification in the Open Internet Order, the FTC's authority over broadband ISPs became more limited, a consequence which, incidentally, my boss had been talking about since mid-2014 or so, my boss, Commissioner Olhausen. Reclassification subject ISPs to Section 222 of the Communications Act and to the FCC's CPNI, which is the Customer Proprietary Network Information Rules. But the FCC, in reclassifying broadband, recognized that the current CPNI rules, which were created for telephone communications, weren't particularly well suited to broadband service. Therefore, in March 2016, the FCC proposed new rules to govern privacy and data security of broadband ISPs. 9 months later or so, I guess 7 months later, in October 2016, the FCC adopted the final rules, and those rules were released in print form in the middle of last week. So this is really breaking news. The rules have a implementation period, and so they don't go into effect immediately. There will be some time on that, and the time differs slightly for different parts of them depending on the size of the ISP. But they will have an impact on broadband ISPs and on the consumers who use broadband ISPs. So let's just talk. Let me just kick it off by going up to the 10,000 foot level. Much of the discussion in the back and forth and the discussion in prior to setting these rules was about when ISPs may collect and use information about their subscribers. So let me just ask, Michelle, why might ISPs want to collect and use information about their subscribers, and how valuable is such information?
Thanks, Neil. So to address that, I think, you know, the reason that this information is so useful is because it allows us to offer our customers new and innovative products and services. Sometimes those offers come from third parties. Sometimes they may come from T-Mobile or the ISP itself. And I'll give you an example because I think it's always easy to kind of speak using examples and different use cases. So one might be that we might know that a consumer is in the market for new phones or for a new device, and we may offer the consumer that device at a discount. So not only are we able to know which consumers are more interested in, for example, a new device and target advertising to them, but that consumer will also be able to take advantage of potential discounts or other kinds of offers that are useful and relevant to them. And I think the thing to kind of keep in mind as we talk about this today is that the consumer at a baseline would always have a choice. They would always be able to opt out if they didn't like that information is being used to make them these kinds of offers, or if they valued their privacy over the convenient features or the discounted offerings that the ISP is giving them. I think the question and the issue that we're going to talk about today is whether, you know, that choice should be opt in or opt out. In other words, whether the default is that these offers are made to them and they get to opt out if they want, or whether the default is that we can't use that information and they would have to actually opt in for us to make those offers. So I think the final piece that I would just mention at the outset is that this same information and these same types of offerings that I'm talking about are made by edge providers like social networks and search engines and operating systems. And so, you know, and those folks are under a different regime under the FTC, which I know we'll talk about a little bit more as we continue the discussion. But I just kind of want to throw out there that right now we're dealing with two potentially different regimes. And so in order for us to innovate and compete, you know, that's another reason why it's important, why this information is valuable, because it allows ISPs to innovate and compete just like the edge providers who are subject to a different regime.
Well, so Michelle, you mentioned the sort of that the online world has lots of services where we get free to consumers and they're advertising supported. But not only the online world, a world that's more familiar to perhaps our audience, in the telecom space, free over the air broadcast television is advertising supported. The consumers seem to enjoy these platforms and seem to benefit from having a product that is funded through an advertising model. But is there something about Dallas, is there something special about ISPs that raise concerns? Or is this a concern about targeted advertising that kind of applies across the board from public knowledge's point of view?
Hey, Neil, thanks for the question. So, targeted advertising in itself is a useful thing. Ads suck in general, right? And if you can get an ad that is relevant to you in some way, public knowledge is all for that. The question simply is whether your internet service provider should be asking you beforehand or after they, go ahead and use your information. And we think that consumers should be in control of their information and therefore should be asked before that information is used. No problem with ISPs using the information in general. Now, when it comes to whether ISPs are different, I definitely think they are. I think the law treats them differently, aside from some of the other practical differences. For instance, I know plenty of people, myself included, who are not on Facebook. I can continue to do my job. I can continue to get my news. I can continue to remain in contact with my friends and family. But that simply isn't a choice when it comes to my internet service provider. I have one choice if I want broadband and one choice only. And so I have no option but to hand over this information to the internet service provider. And in return, I would like and expect that they ask me before they use it for any particular purpose.
Great. So that kind of gets, you both have already mentioned opt-in and opt-out. And I think to the layperson out there, it may not seem like a very big difference. So why is it a big difference? Because what I've heard from both of you is essentially we want to give consumers choice before they get this advertising. And it sounds like the difference between you is essentially where you would draw, when should it be opt-in and when should it be opt-out? And so can I just get each of your thoughts about the difference between those two? Is there any difference? Why does it matter? And what do we know about how, in particular, maybe other agencies such as the FTC, Michelle, you mentioned the dual, that there's now two regimes, about how other agencies like the FTC have made that determination between opt-in and opt-out. Maybe Dallas, you could go ahead and talk about opt-in versus opt-out and why that matters from your perspective. And then, Michelle, you could talk about the FTC's opt-in, opt-out, and how that – and then we can kind of explore maybe the differences between the two regimes.
Sure. So there is a clear reason why internet service providers have been fighting so hard to – get as much information in the opt-out category as possible. And it's because it's well documented that people are highly unlikely, even those who don't really want to have their information shared, are highly unlikely to take that affirmative step to go and opt out. And if you think about it from a consumer perspective, the incentive for opt-in will be for the ISP to make it as easy as possible for consumers to opt in. But if it's an opt-out regime, the incentive is for the internet service provider to make it as difficult as possible to opt out. And I invite everyone on the call right now to attempt to opt out from their internet service provider's sharing of their information and see what it's like and how easy or difficult it is. So there's no doubt in my mind that the best way to give consumers control is really to make it an opt-in. If you want to use their information, lay the case out in front of them why it's so good for them, ask them before, and people will opt in. We can all go on, be happy.
So
great.
This is Michelle. I'll respond to that a little bit, and then, Neil, I'll get to your question about the FTC. So, I think we have a bit of a different view here coming from T-Mobile, and I think, and I could probably say that most of industry feels this way, most of the ISPs, because unlike many of the edge providers who are regulated by the FTC, and when I say edge providers, I'm talking about, search engines, social networking sites, operating systems, browsers, we actually have a direct relationship with our customers as ISPs. The customer knows who their ISP is. They know what the website of their ISP. They usually are going to that website to check their account or do other things, relating to billing. And
And I think it's actually quite easy for the consumer to go and to opt out. And you know, if you go to our privacy policy, which I would invite anyone to do, you should easily be able to find how to opt out of T-Mobile's programs. So you know, given that, I think, and the other thing I would say before I move on is that I think it's easy to regulate for that, right? I think it would have been very easy for the FCC to say, hey, we're going to make this opt out. And in fact, they do this, right? For those things that are opt out, you need to have a clear, easy mechanism for consumers to find and to be able to opt out. Now, the question of whether consumers are going to opt out or whether they're going to opt in, right? The question of whether consumers are actually going to take action is certainly one that's been debated, I think, and I understand, Dallas, where you're coming from, there's been research on both ends, but I think the big issue here is what should the default be, and should the default be consistent with what the majority of consumers care about and want? And so I think it makes sense when you're talking about sensitive data, and again, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because I know we're going to be talking about this even more, but when you're talking about sensitive data that is truly sensitive and could lead to harm, it makes sense for the default there to be opt-in. But the concern that we have is that the FCC has included in its definition of sensitive kind of an expanded category of data that we think is not sensitive. And so when the default there is opt-in, you're dealing with a different situation. You're essentially not allowing consumers to see what the value is. You have to basically explain it to them in a couple words or a couple sentences, right, to get their attention. Hey, consumer, you know, we want to offer you these great new innovative products and services. Well, if you can't see what they are, it's sometimes hard to understand what you're getting. Whereas if you can offer those ads and discounts, et cetera, and the consumer says, look, I'm not comfortable with that, then the consumer has the opportunity to opt out. And so I think where the FTC drew, to kind of get to your question, Neil, and I'm sorry it took me so long to get there, but the FTC's approach has been exactly that. The FTC said, we're going to draw the line on sensitivity. If the data is truly sensitive, then the default will be opt-in, meaning that the consumer will not be part of the program unless the consumer opts into it. But if it's non-sensitive data, and it really isn't, you know, it's not sensitive, so for example, somebody's web browsing information that doesn't relate to, you know, the sensitive categories like health or financial information, or doesn't include someone's precise geolocation information. If the fact that somebody just went to look at shoes, or is a furniture shopper, or is a shoe lover, or a sports fan, that's not sensitive information. And so for that, the default is going to be opt out, meaning that the consumer will be part of the program, they'll get to see the benefits of that program, and if they don't like them, then they can go and opt out. And I think the FTC drew the right line there. And I think to contrast that with the FCC's approach, the FCC moved to a sensitivity-based approach over time. The original notice of proposed rulemaking did not include a sensitivity-based approach, but the FTC moved there because there was a lot of debate about this, and the recommendation was that they be consistent with the FTC. So it's great that they moved to a sensitivity-based approach and are focusing on harm. The problem, of course, is that they have now expanded the FTC's definition of sensitive data to include non-sensitive information, like, as I said, web browsing that doesn't actually relate to health or financial or anything like that. And so I think that's where our concern lies.
Well, so Neil, do you mind if I respond?
Oh, no, yes. Go ahead. I think, you know, yes, go ahead. Please do.
Okay, great. Sorry. I think the FTC put out that report after a lot of...
You mean the 2012
The 2012 privacy report. After a lot of good, great, thoughtful work. But let's keep in mind that was in 2012. We're now in 2016, and there is no doubt that the amounts of data, the ability to analyze data, the types of information that you can glean from data has increased exponentially since then. And, you know, to take your example, and this should hopefully explain why we think all web browsing is sensitive. You know, to take your example of knowing someone is a sports fan, that's you glean that from taking a comprehensive look at their web browsing history. Taking that comprehensive look at their web browsing history, you could easily glean other things that people may consider sensitive. And maybe you might not consider them sensitive, right? But other people might, such as race, gender, sexual orientation, right? Income level. All of these things can be figured out simply from the top level domains that you visit, how often you're home, when you're visiting, how often you're on those sites. So while there might be little bits of pieces of, well, if someone knows I went to this one website, it wouldn't be a big deal. What we're really looking at is internet service providers who have a comprehensive look at what you're doing, and maybe they can glean, you know, facts about you that you may feel are not sensitive, but that's only after taking that comprehensive look, where they could also easily glean other things that some people might consider sensitive. So you have to have all web browsing history as sensitive. There's no way practically to silo those things.
Neil, if I could respond to that, I've got a couple things. Okay, so first of all, with respect to the FTC report, I certainly understand, Dallas, your concern about the FTC report being 4 years old. Having had the privilege to kind of work on the framework that was included in that report, I get it, and I realize that lots of things change in terms of technology over the course of 4 years. But the one thing that I would point out is that the FTC staff filed comments in this proceeding with the FCC this summer, and in their comments, they didn't change their approach. They didn't suggest that web browsing should be included, and in fact, they touched on the areas that were particularly sensitive with respect to web browsing. So, for example, search terms, purchase history, and that kind of brings me to the next point that you made, which is your concern about race and gender and sexual orientation, income level, et cetera. And again, I understand those concerns, but I think that the FCC could have taken an approach that was more narrowly tailored. In other words, they could have said web browsing, to the extent that it involves health-related, financial-related information, to the extent it relates to race or gender, they could have been more, to the extent that it includes search terms or purchase history. Now, I'm not commenting on whether that would have been, you know, what they should have included, but my point is simply that the FCC could have taken a more narrowly tailored approach. And I think in terms of operationalizing that as an ISP, because I understand, again, your concern that you can't really – how does someone figure that out on the back end? Well, I think it's pretty easy, and I think this is – there are techniques that the FTC was aware of when the FTC put out its FTC privacy report, which was, you know, at the time, again, when I was at the FTC, we asked companies the same question, like, how would you operation, if we said, you know, you can't use web browsing information that relates to health, you know, how would you operationalize that? And one of the things that companies use is a method called whitelisting, which is essentially where the company decides on the front end what is going to be part of the program. And so they can create a narrow program that just relates to, that simply puts people in buckets like sports fan, shoe lover, furniture shopper, and that doesn't put people in buckets like, you know, that are more sensitive, like some of the ones you mentioned. And so, you know, which buckets were, the FCC had the ability to kind of look at this and take a narrowly tailored approach and say, you know, web browsing that relates to X, Y, and Z would be considered sensitive. And I think the concern that we have is that the approach was, well, you know, this may be difficult, so let's just include everything. And that puts us on a very different playing field from edge providers who are able to use the exact same information and have it as an opt-out. So we're not giving consumers any advantage here. We're simply saying, well, one section, you know, one small portion of the companies that have your information will provide an opt-in, but the rest will provide an opt-out. So I don't think consumers we're providing any additional benefit to consumers by taking this approach.
This discussion of sensitivity does seem to be the sort of at the core of this debate. it's interesting, and I wanted to kind of dial it back a little bit, turn the clock back a little bit to the FCC's initial proposal, which unlike the final rule, did not set the opt-in or opt-out categories based on the sensitivity of data, but instead based on what entity held or used the data. So there was, or was collecting the data. So there was one set of opt-in, opt-out for the ISPs. And there were different set of opt-out for third parties who might use that data that the ISP would pass to them. Dallas, I was wondering. I believe public knowledge was generally supportive of that initial approach, and I was curious about why what were the advantages of that approach? Were there any disadvantages, and why do you think the FCC shifted when it moved to the final order?
So public knowledge was very supportive of the FCC's initial rules as proposed. And really, the goal of this rulemaking was to put consumers in charge of their information. And so that's essentially how we have been assessing each variation of the rules as it comes along, right? Are consumers going to be more empowered? And we thought that the rules that the chairman put forward were extremely strong and would have been great for consumers. Now, the commission chose to switch to the sensitive versus non-sensitive distinction in order to accommodate, the request of ISPs to make it much more similar to the regime that they were under at the FTC, even though the FCC was under no legal requirement to adopt the FTC's framework or, to be influenced by the FTC at all. They decided to come to the middle and listen to their sister agency, pull some of the FTC's expertise in where they found appropriate, and then replace their expertise with where they found appropriate, which is with CPNI. That's the FCC's expertise. Mm-hmm. And so they've kind of done this nice little, what we think, blend here in hopes of making ISPs happy. And obviously it hasn't succeeded, but we think consumers are still much better off after these rules have been passed. And we're happy to see that the chairman's done this. And we think it's unfortunate that the commission came, such a long way to accommodate what ISPs are asking for. And, they still don't want to play.
Michelle, any thoughts on the shift from the sort of entity-based approach to the sensitivity-based approach and whether or not ISPs want to play and why?
Unfortunately, these are now rules, so I don't know that it matters whether we want to play. We have to play. So, but sure. My view, and again, I'm biased, having come from the FTC at the time that it put out the report. But my view is that the FTC's approach, was a really great middle ground. It addressed potential harms. The sensitivity-based approach is a harm-based approach. And what I like about that approach is that the FTC was focused on potential harms. And by focusing on sensitive data and drawing the line at opt-in for sensitive data, but still giving choice to consumers who may, there may be consumers who look at non-sensitive data and think, well, that's sensitive to me, and I get that. But the FTC basically said, well, if that's the case, then that consumer will have the opportunity to opt out. And I think the FTC approach basically addressed potential harms while still fostering and facilitating innovation and competition among the internet ecosystem. And so I think that is basically what pushed the FCC to where they to kind of take on this sensitivity-based approach, because I think they realized that the FTC approach worked. And, you know, one of the things that we raised in our filings and that I've raised several times is I haven't really heard from people what is wrong about the FTC's approach, or what, you know, why it hasn't worked, or what harms have continued to occur despite the FTC's approach. And so I think that probably a combination of you know, again, that approach really working well for, you know, and there not being any additional harms that others have really been able to cite to that maybe pushed the FCC in this direction. But ultimately, you know, whether it was that or whether it was sheer politics, I'm not sure. But we do, you know, as I said, we do appreciate the FCC moving in that direction. We just think that the FCC could have drawn a bit of a different line in defining what is sensitive data. And I think that's really the crux of it. You know, I will say, again, there was a Progressive Policy Institute survey that was done in the midst of all of this, and the survey showed that 83% of consumers they wanted regulations based on the sensitivity of their data and not based on who holds it. So again, I think, you know, things like that are probably what pushed the FCC, because what consumers care about is that their sensitive data is being protected. They don't care if, you know, the same piece of data is being held by their ISP versus another company. You know, it's not about who's holding it. It's about what kind of data it is and whether it's sensitive. So I think that's probably, I think when you kind of pull that all together, I think that's what pushed the FCC in this direction.
So just for our listeners who may not be as familiar with the FTC's definition of sensitive data and the FCC's new rule, I thought I'd just list off the categories that the FTC generally finds to be sensitive data that would require an opt-in. Those typically include financial information, health information, social security numbers, precise geolocation information, information pertaining to children, and, as they mentioned in the comment to the FCC, I believe, the content of communications. Where the FCC's rules expanded, and you guys have touched on this a good amount, the web browsing history and application usage history, and then the rule says something about the functional equivalent of those two things. And to your mind, I think this is a good question for both of you. I don't think it's really a position question, but to your mind, is this inclusion of web browsing and app usage information, is this the biggest difference between the FCC's approach and the FTC's approach? And do you think of it as a big difference, or is it just a tweak around the edges?
Yes, very big difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very big difference. I think the web browsing and app usage data is really a huge difference. And so I think that's why, you know, when you say, well, why was industry not happy or not pleased, et cetera, you know, I think industry's position from the beginning was that the FCC should take an approach that's consistent with the FTC, because edge providers and ISPs are really seeing the same kinds of information. And in some cases, you could even argue that ISPs see less due to encryption of websites, et cetera. But I think, you know, the problem was that the FCC took this approach, and when they did that and they included web browsing and app usage data, that then created a huge gap between the two approaches. And so even though in theory they took a sensitivity-based approach and it looks like the FTC approach, that web browsing and app usage, the inclusion of that data, I think, is a huge difference. One other thing I'd mention is, you know, I think there are a few other differences. One example is in the FTC's approach, there are different types of consent. There's opt-in consent, there's opt-out consent, and the FTC also said that for uses of information that is consistent with consumer expectations, certain uses, would be sufficient to get inferred consent. Inferred consent meaning that the company can assume that when the customer is okay with them using their information for a certain purpose, and the company therefore doesn't have to even offer an opt-out. The FCC didn't quite take the same approach with respect to inferred consent. Their inferred consent category is much more narrow. An example would be first-party marketing. The FTC basically said that companies can offer new and innovative products and services and simply do it with inferred consent unless their company's products or services are either their business, I think is the language, their business is designed to target customers based on sensitive information. So it wasn't, and for, in those cases, they would need an opt-in, but they weren't even saying opt-in for sensitive information for all first-party marketing uses. They were simply saying if your business is designed to target people for using sensitive data, then in that case, you'd need to get opt-in. So there's a huge difference here because the FTC is now saying inferred consent is an extremely narrow category with respect to marketing of your own products or services. It's much more narrow than the FTC. Then the opt-out is also much more narrow, and now it's opt-in for any use of sensitive information. So I really do think there is a difference here with respect to first-party marketing, and there are other differences, but that's one that jumps out, I think, that beyond the web browsing and app usage information.
Okay.
Go ahead. I was going to say, without the inclusion of web browsing and app usage history, there really would have been a question of whether consumers were actually benefited or protected by this rulemaking at all. It was never the intention for this to simply be a mimic of what the FTC does in every aspect. And I understand why status quo is preferable, but with Title II regulation, Title II classification comes Title II regulation, but also comes some of the goodies that come with Title II, right? I mean, there is a particular expectation that we place upon our common carriers. And there are also benefits that we place upon our common carriers because of the special position that they hold in our society. And so for the FCC to expand that sensitive definition with things that, a lot of consumer groups consider sensitive and we're here to hopefully speak for consumers, although, of course we may sometimes get it wrong, then I think it should be completely and utterly acceptable for the regulation to be a little different and, yes, a little more inclusive.
So there's no doubt that the statutes are quite different and the two agencies are operating under different statutes. But to keep it at the sort of policy level, I think you both agreed that this is a pretty different approach from the FTC. Obviously, I think, Michelle, you see that as having some negative effects. And Dallas, I think you see that as having some benefits. But I'd like to tie it together with a sort of earlier discussion about the harms that we were addressing with this different approach. And Michelle, you mentioned that you ask, like, well, how were ISPs acting badly in the past, or how were they harming consumers? So I'd like to give Dallas you the chance to talk about what's the evidence that this new different regime is going to prevent a consumer harm that the previous regime that ISPs was under was not preventing.
So I don't think that I'm making that particular claim.
Okay.
This rulemaking is not about the inefficiencies of the previous regime. So, for me to advocate for the FCC to put out strong rules is not to necessarily suggest that they're the only reason they need to do that is because the previous regime was bad, right? I mean, this came out of reclassification. So how well the FTC was doing previously isn't entirely relevant to what the FCC should do or is legally able to do.
So do you think that there is some legal Like I said, the statutes are very different. Section 222 is very different from unfair and deceptive acts and practices under Section 5. Is there a legal would there have been a legal obstacle to the FCC adopting, not including web browsing and app usage in the Section 222, to include that as sensitive data? Were there legal obstacles to the FCC doing that?
To simply just adopting what the FTC has wholesale? No.
Well, yeah, adopting the definition of sensitive information that the FTC had.
They could have done that, sure. There was no reason that they had to do exactly like the FTC, and
okay.
No reason why they had to go completely different from the FTC, which is why
okay.
they went somewhere in the middle, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, Neil, I would just echo what Dallas said. I mean, I think the FCC could have within Section 222 taken an approach similar to the FTC. The consent mechanism that is contemplated in Section 222 doesn't require opt-in or opt-out per se, and simply could, they could have outlined any consent system, you know, that they wanted to under that mechanism within certain bounds. But I mean, I think in terms of what industry was arguing for, I think they could have done that. And in terms of what the FTC's approach was, I think they could have done that. So, you know, I would just echo, I don't think the FCC needed to go where they went with respect to web browsing and app usage with respect, you know, in terms of what the statute required. And I think they could have taken a different approach and kind of seen how, you know, to see how it works, because the fear here is that you don't want to regulate, you know, against harms that don't necessarily exist, because then what happens is you potentially stifle innovation and competition. Whereas if you do it the other way, right, if you regulate, you know, the harms that you are aware of, and then additional harms are, you know, come about, then the FCC always has the ability to go back to their rules and adjust them for those purposes. So I think that's, you know, that's maybe the difference between, you know, our two positions here is whether the FCC should have gone further at the outset or whether they should have taken a step back, you know, gone with the approach the FTC had taken, given that no additional harms had been identified that weren't addressed by the FTC's approach, and then taken it from there.
All right. So we've talked a lot about the privacy provisions of the FCC's new rules, but there are data security and data breach requirements that are in the new rules as well. What do those rules require, and how do they compare with the FTC's past approach in to provide reasonable security? Is this an area where the FTC and the FCC are closer than in the privacy space, or are there still some significant differences between the two approaches?
Okay, I'm happy to answer. This is Michelle.
Sure.
Yes.
You know, I think generally speaking, I think it's, and Neil, you might, I don't know, you may disagree with me, but I think generally speaking, the FCC took the same approach as the FTC by incorporating a reasonable data security standard. The FCC at first had created kind of a checklist of things that companies must do in order to meet that, in order to meet the data security standard, but they ultimately took those out and just included a reasonable data security standard. And then the NPRM itself has some language about some things that companies should consider doing in order to have reasonable data security. And some of those things are things that the FTC has talked about in the past. I think the crux of it is that they are not, the FCC is not telling companies you must do X, Y, and Z. And I think that was a good idea. And the way we explained it to the FCC was, you know, you don't want to mandate certain measures and then later find that those measures are no longer, are outdated, right? Technology has evolved, the threat environment has evolved, and companies are being forced to spend their time and energy implementing certain measures that no longer are useful, and they can't then focus on kind of new technology and new techniques
trying to prevent, you know, data breaches. So with that, I think the FCC really did go in the right direction here, and I think, you know, we would hope that they will kind of stay there and, again, kind of look at each case, each data breach, and not assume that, you know, just because a data breach happens that someone has violated these rules, or, you know, that a company has violated these rules.
Any response, Dallas? It sounded like a point of agreement, but I don't want to falsely create an agreement if there isn't.
You know what? Public knowledge hasn't really advocated much on the data breach rules in this context. So we're of course happy that consumers are going to have to be notified fairly quickly, and that the requirements are strong.
Okay, great. Well, I know we promised to leave some time for questions and answers. So, Dean, if you wanted to open up the line for questions, I know there's at least one other topic I wouldn't mind talking about. So, Dallas and Michelle, if you want to think about the issues raised by financial inducements or discounts that ISPs might offer, maybe I'll come back to that question. But for now, Dean, if you could open up the line to see if we have any questions from our audience.
Let's do that. In a moment, we'll all hear an announcement that will say the floor mode is on. After that announcement, if you have a question, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Once again, if you have a question for any of our experts, push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone. Be happy to take the questions in the order they're received. Quick announcement. Check our website for upcoming Federal Society Teleforum conference calls. Also, the National Lawyers Convention, which begins next Thursday. Registration is, of course, open. You can find that on our website as well. Today, of course, we're talking about privacy. We have one caller. If you'd like to join the queue, push the star button and the pound button on your telephone. For now, let's take our first call of the day.
Yes, it's David Emerson, Berkeley's Federalist Society. Now, I work out here in Silicon Valley on a regular basis with very sophisticated marketing company startups, and it strikes me from listening to this discussion that the FCC's understanding of what can be done with that is at least a couple of generations beyond or behind the state of the art. I'm not really hearing much about the, I guess what's called a mosaic approach to big data, data mining, and privacy issues, which has occupied the courts at the Fourth Amendment level in the FTC's analysis. And I guess my question succinctly is, when it comes to sensitive data, of course, I take a very broad sense of what would be sensitive about me, including what politically incorrect causes I might support or subscribe to. Beyond what's been described. But when it comes to the definition of sensitive data that's being discussed in these regulations, is that generally thought of as an individual piece of data by itself, or is it sensitive data which could be, let's say, deduced or inferred analytically by an analysis of many small pieces, again, along the mosaic approach to privacy?
Michelle and Dallas, I that actually sounds like a question that might be better answered by me. I don't know as the moderator, but I don't want to as a moderator at the FTC because we've dealt with some of these issues in our big data report. But I'm of course happy to let either of you answer. It's a great question and one that concerns and is challenging for privacy. Regulators across the federal government. So does one of you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, so let me just – I'm going to let Neil deal with this at a policy level and from an FTC standpoint. But I guess the one thing I would point out, you know, and has been pointed out already on this call is we're dealing – each agency deals with different statutes, and the statute is going to be what governs, I think, that issue. And so – you know, the FCC's statute, Section 222, the CP&I statute, which is governing these, you know, which is where these rules are derived from, talks about the customer proprietary network information, and that is information that comes from the network. I read that to mean
data pieces, right, that come from the network. And to the extent that, you know, the FCC is worried about what determinations a company makes as a result of that, I don't think that is governed by Section 222. You know, there probably are some creative ways that the FCC could have worded things, but, you know, but of course they didn't end up going that route. They decided to just include all web browsing and app usage data altogether. So, but yeah, I think Section 222 is tied to the data itself and not necessarily derivative determination, you know, determinations of people's preferences as a result of that.
Dallas, did you have any thoughts on that question?
Yeah, it appears that the FCC has taken a dual approach, right? So when it comes to financial or health or information relating to children, I don't believe that they're referring to just children's websites, right? They're referring to anything that could lead to, you know, knowing you have cancer. Right, that would then fall under health information as sensitive. That's at least my understanding, and I think that practically, the way that the world and the internet information works, you have to think of it that way. Otherwise, consumers really, you don't get that protection. They can still find that information out just by looking at a lot of bits of information. So what if they can't tell it from one bit? I mean, that's not functionally useful to consumers at this point.
And I will just quickly, because I don't want to derail this too much from the FCC's privacy rule, but the FTC, in thinking about this, just remember that we're talking about the choice component of the of our privacy principles. So we're talking about where consumers are making choices about the data that's collected about them. And so from that aspect, we are talking about the information that is collected and not the use to which it is put necessarily, other than requiring that when consumers are choosing that they be informed about the use to which it's put. So I think this is one of the big challenges with big data analysis, and it's one of the big challenges with a privacy framework that focuses purely on choice. And I should say, that's not the only possible approach to privacy. My boss has talked about the need to think about use-based restrictions in certain contexts, similar to what we have for the Fair Credit Reporting Act, where it doesn't say it doesn't really matter what data they use to make a determination about your creditworthiness. It's the use that matters. And so in some contexts, that might be a useful approach. And I think we'll continue to run up against it. You talked about it in the Fourth Amendment context, and I think there's, from a sort of federalist perspective, there's always a greater concern when we're talking about governments using data, and that's built into our Constitution because of the monopoly on force that they have. The commercial uses are different. Typically, companies are trying to sell you something, which in a free market system hopefully is to your benefit. And so we have different approaches in those two different verticals. But it is a challenge in talking about if we only focus on choice. And I think it's a challenge that's been recognized by many privacy advocates. And so it's a great point for you to pick up on. Dean, do we have any other questions in the queue?
Let me repeat the instructions. We don't have any questions now, but if you'd like to ask a question, the lines are wide open. Push the star button and then the pound button on your telephone.
Well, while you're doing that, I know we're running short on time. I wanted to talk about, the FCC rule addressed financial inducements or discounts that ISPs might offer in exchange for consumers allowing ISPs greater access and use of data about them. In the initial NPRM, I think the FCC asked if such practices should be prohibited, and my boss in her separate statement said that essentially that a ban on such practices would prohibit even fully informed consumers from trading some data about themselves in exchange for a reduced cost of service. The FCC ultimately decided that these discount arrangements raise unique considerations. That's a quote. And the rules require heightened disclosure and simple mechanisms to withdraw consent, and that these programs would be reviewed on a case-by-case basis. These types of discounts, exchanges, are extremely common in across the economy. You know, everybody uses their CVS, like, membership card. Maybe not everybody. I don't always, often. But they can use these cards to get a discount, and that is trading some information for a discount. Is the FCC right that these arrangements raise unique considerations in the ISP context? And why would that be? And if so, do the FCC's rules sufficiently address these unique considerations? And I'll throw that open to the both of you. And then if we have time for another question at the end, let's do that. Michelle?
Yeah, happy to let Dallas go first. Yeah, so look, I think, you know, with respect to, first of all, I think there are various models, right? There are models where, you know, the same a service is offered at a certain price and then a different service, you know, the same service is offered that is, you know, with no advertising or no use of the consumer's data, and that's offered at a higher price. We've seen that recently. That one ISP did that, you know, offered that recently. There are also other kinds of programs where, you know, the opt-in is tied to a rewards program. And so if the consumer wants to be part of the rewards program, then, you know, they're using that, you know, they're opting into the use of their data. So I think there are different approaches, and I think it's impossible in the next 4 minutes for us to talk about all of them
right.
And the nuances there. I will say, you know, I think it makes sense certainly to offer disclosures relating to those practices, you know, and so, you know, I think offering disclosures and explaining what you're offering makes sense. I'm glad the FCC didn't ban the use of those practices, not only for policy reasons, but also because Section 222 doesn't really support a ban. Again, it's a consent. There's a consent model contained in Section 222. And so the idea is that if a consumer is willing to consent, any practice should be allowed. So, you know, I guess the one thing that worries us a little bit is the case-by-case review from an enforcement perspective. This is something the FCC is doing, for example, in the world of zero rating. It's a little concerning because, you know, having a flexible rule and allowing companies to draw the line, I think, you know, that makes sense. But kind of saying, you know, we're going to look at this on a case-by-case review, it's going to potentially stifle innovation in this space, and companies are going to have more concerns about, well, if I do this, and then we get our case-by-case review, you know. So I think there might have been, I think the FCC probably could have done a better job of just saying, look, this is what we're concerned about. You know, we're not prohibiting anything, but, you know, talking about their heightened disclosures and kind of leaving it at that.
Dallas, any thoughts on financial inducements or discounts for ISPs?
Sure. Yeah. So our concern has always been for the lowest income consumers. You know, it's not as clear cut of a decision here if, you know, of course, one person can just choose to make that exchange with their ISP. That's probably okay. But the problem comes when it's not a choice. Broadband is essential, right? I mean, you need it to apply for jobs, to do online banking, to keep in contact with friends and family. And so we don't think that the lowest income consumers should have to feel pressure to give up their privacy in order to get broadband, right? And the one product that was on the market was AT&T's, I forget what they called it, but they were offering, you know, a gig service at $70 if you offered to opt in, and $100 otherwise. And, you know, it became really clear once they stopped the program that, you know, these aren't in fact discounts. They're actually charging you for your privacy, because all of those customers are now being offered the product at $70 once they stopped the program. So, you know, that I think that's a little bit revealing of some of the motives that can be behind them, which is why it was important that the FCC retained its ability to take a look at these programs as they emerge in the market, and, you know, slap back the ones that are particularly harmful. We just expanded Lifeline modernization to include broadband. We're going to have a whole bunch of low-income Americans on the internet if the program is successful. And it would be a shame if they were offered a privacy inducement so that you know, $10 off, and now all of a sudden their lifeline subsidy covers entire broadband. And what we've got is an entire lifeline a lifeline population without any privacy protection. So, you know, those are the types of things that I think the FCC needs to be on the lookout for.
All right. Dean, I know it's right at 2 o'clock. I don't know if we have anybody in the queue to ask a question or if...
We do not have any further questions, Neil.
Okay. Great. Thanks to Michelle and Dallas and to Dean and to all of you for listening to us talk for the last hour or so. And I'll turn it over to you, Dean.
Thank you very much. Let me join in thanking the two panelists and our moderator, Neil Chilton, and as well thanking the audience for dialing in and for your questions. A reminder to check our website for the next scheduled Teleforum conference call. But until that next call, we are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this Practice Group podcast. For materials related to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at fedsoc.org/multimedia.